All right, anytime you're ready, yeah. Is it going? Oh, okay, I usually see something here. Okay, wonderful. So I'm gonna call to order this city council meeting for the city of Atascadero and ask Councilmember Darris to lead us in a pledge to the flag. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Here.
Councilmember Darris?
Here.
Councilmember Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. All right. Well, if you are, those of you attending here in person, welcome. If you're on the Zoom webinar or watching or listening in many, one of the many other ways that we have available, we welcome you tonight. If you are on YouTube or, you know, listening on the radio, watching on Channel 20, and you would like to call in during public comment or community forum, I'm going to go ahead and give you that phone number. Also know that if you go to atascadero.org and you look at and you download the agenda, it will be on the front page of that agenda will be this information. But I'll go ahead and give that to you now. The Zoom number is 669-900-6833. Once again, that's 669-900-6833. And then when you call in, the meeting ID will be 889-2347-9018. Again, 889-2347-9018. And when you call, let us know which item it is that you would like to speak on. And let's see, can I get an approval of the agenda?
I'll move approval of the agenda.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbo, a second by Councilmember Newsom. We will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the city council votes. Roll call, please.
Excuse me, Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We're on to the consent calendar. The consent calendar is considered to contain items that are routine and non-controversial in nature and can generally be approved in one motion unless there's a member of the public or a member of the council wishing to pull an item for further discussion or comment. So with that, I will look to my council members to see if there are any items wishing to be pulled. Yes?
I'd like a brief comment on item 3.
Okay, so let's pull item 3. And any member of the public wishing to pull or comment on an item on the consent? I'm not seeing any. Let me go to the webinar here. Okay, I'm not sure if I did that right. Okay. There we go. Okay, I had to. Shoot. I'm joined via audio in two different places, so normally I'm able to open this up and see the participants, and right now, even though I've muted myself, I'm getting a feedback. Okay, so I'm going to look to the attendees. I don't see anyone with the hand raised. If there is anything on the consent you wanted to comment on or poll, go ahead and raise a hand. I'm not seeing any. So I'm going to ask for a motion on the consent calendar minus item 3.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar except for A3.
I'll second.
A motion by Councilmember Borbo, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem, if you'd like to comment on item 3.
Sure, thank you. Item 3 is our staff's housing element update and progress report. I'm noting that at this point, I did some discussions with staff summarizing, you know, the where we are in terms of the I don't have that to share, but if you add in both what we've done, what's been built so far, and the projects that are permitted or in construction already or are in the pipeline. We have, if I recall correctly, I believe about 78% of what we would expect to get in the entire 8 years. And we would be about halfway through the cycle right now, right? If we count the stuff that's in the pipeline, then we're looking at sort of trying to be about, would want to be about halfway through getting the housing built that is expected in that. And if I recall correctly, we're about 78%. Is that correct?
That does seem reasonable.
Okay. And that we are exceeding that target in all categories except for the low, very low and extremely low incomes. And in that category, if I recall, there were 207 units that the state expects that our population will need in folks who have very little income. And we've built, so far, four of them have been built. And we don't, and that are in the pipeline. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So even if the Del Rio Ridge Target project that's, you know, we're trying to have built in the north end of town by People's Self-Help Housing, that's for like 44 units, that would still get us less than a quarter of a way to what the state says we're going to need in order to take care of the low and extremely low population in our county, or in our city. Is that correct?
That is correct. Those extremely low and very low unit incomes are very hard to come by.
Right. They're very, very hard to get, and they, of course, require an extensive amount of subsidy. And in my experience, generally occur in, most of them come in permanent supportive housing projects designated to that group. Sorry about the feedback. I don't know where we're getting it from. But anyway, I just wanted to make sure that we had a good understanding and that folks out there had a good understanding of where we are. The bottom line is in all of the other categories of income, we are substantially exceeding what the targets that the state says our community would need for affordable housing, which is good news for our future. Thank you.
Any member of the public wishing to speak on this item? Anyone in the webinar, if you want to raise your hand? Any members of the council? All right, motion. I would request a motion.
I'll move approval of item A3.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbeau.
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom.
Yes.
Councilmember Darris.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Yes.
Mayor Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. I'm going to hand this off to the city manager for the city manager update, along with a marketing update.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. The first thing I want to do tonight is to thank Abby from our IT staff. She is filling in here at the last minute and doing all of our IT duties because of some unexpected occurrences. Abby is filling in with very limited training and trying to figure things out, so bear with us a little bit, and we truly appreciate her coming and filling in for us, so thank you, Abby.
Yeah, no, we appreciate her very much. This is not an easy task, so for the first round, pretty good. Thank you.
Thank you. Want to talk tonight, if Abby could bring up the city manager report for me. Talk tonight first about the A-Town Downtown Passport. It is not too late. So you can get your passport. They're available at 35 locations in the downtown. You collect all 6 stamps from participating retailers now through April 13th, which is Thursday, at 5 p.m. And then if you get all 6 stamps, you are eligible to be entered into a drawing for a downtown shopping spree. And if you get your card in soon, you'll receive a free gift while supplies last. And I will tell you, it's a pretty cool gift. It's a free lens cloth for your eyeglasses. Really cute. So you get that while supplies last. But if you're too late, you don't get those. And you will, whether you get the free gift or not, you are eligible to be entered into the drawing for the downtown shopping spree. So each first Friday through June, we'll have a new passport offered at businesses participating in the downtown. To find out who is participating and where you can turn in your passport by 5 p.m. on Thursday, you can scan the QR code or go to visitatascadero.com/events and click on First Fridays. And then we'll do next slide. It's that favorite time of year. It's time to either sell or shop for the 6th annual citywide yard sale coming up this weekend on April 15th from 8 a.m. until 2 p.m. If you're still interested in selling, there's still time to be included on the digital map. The cost is $20 per household and $40 for businesses or organizations, but hurry. It's this Friday, this Saturday, so you got to get it in like now. There will be over 90 sellers on Saturday, and for a digital map to find all of the locations, go to atascaderoyardsale.com. And then there are more spring cleaning opportunities coming up. Earthshine Day cleanup event is on Saturday, April 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. So meet in the Sunken Gardens at 10 a.m. You won't be able to miss the group there. They have all of the tools and things you need to help clean up the creek. They supply everything you'll need, including grabbers, bags, safety vests, and gloves. Make sure you wear long pants and closed-toed shoes to stay safe. You're going to want a hat, sunscreen to protect yourself from the elements, and bring water or a snack to stay hydrated and energized. Councilmember Charles Bourbeau will be providing pizza. Thank you, Councilmember Bourbeau. And refreshments for all our volunteers as a thank you for all your hard work. This is a huge effort. We appreciate everybody that comes out and does this. It's actually a lot of fun, too, and it makes a big difference in our creek. We also have coming up Atascadero Waste Management Residential Waste Drop-Off Week. It starts April 22nd and goes through April 29th. Waste Management will be offering free drop-off for Atascadero customers from 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Chicago Grade Landfill. The event makes it easier for residents to dispose of extra or large item residential waste at no cost to them. Non-acceptable items are debris generated from commercial construction or commercial landscaping. And the event is open to all Atascadero Waste Management customers. A voucher is required, so don't show up at the dump and think, hey, I'm going to drop off my stuff for free. You need to get a voucher by calling Waste Management or by stopping by their office on Pueblo Avenue. Customers are urged to pick up their vouchers before the actual drop-off beginning on April 22nd. So call now, get it, drop by. It's very convenient there on Pueblo. In addition, from April 22nd to 29th, paper shredding will be available at their customer service center. So go get stuff shredded and pick up your voucher at the same time. From 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and if you need more information, call Waste Management at 805-466-3636. This is a great service, great time to get rid of a bunch of stuff that's piled up. Bring it on into the landfill. And then we have coming up a bunch of fun events at the zoo, so we'll change slides here. We have Spring Festival and Party for the Planet. If you're looking for a great family activity during spring break, come check out all the fun at the Charles Paddock Zoo. Our spring festival is kicked off with a variety of fun things to see and do, plus adorable baby chicks, along with scheduled keeper talks. And all of that is happening through this Saturday, April 16th. And on Saturday, April 22nd, I think this Saturday is April 15th, right? Yes. On Saturday, April 22nd, from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m., Party for the Planet will celebrate Earth Day. So lots of things happening. Party for the Planet's a family event that focuses on natural resource conservation, the protection of global and local animal and plants. It really goes a long way towards the zoo's mission of saving animals from extinction. It's a really fun day. There's a lot of interactive exhibits, hands-on activities, entertaining and educational exhibits, plus food will be available for purchase from Zendog and Paradise Shaved Ice. We always want to thank our sponsors who make these events possible. So thank you to Atascadero Mutual Water Company, Solarponics, Waste Management, and our friend sponsor, Five Star Rain Getters. So thank you to all of those. And one of my favorite events, our 9th annual Brew at the Zoo is right around the corner. So it's on Saturday, April 29th from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. Get ready to experience over 15 craft breweries, ciders, and distilled spirits and wineries in a commemorative glass, plus a chance to visit all of our animals in the zoo. We are excited to announce that we will have Garden Party Band, Dante Marsh and the Vibe Setters, and a live DJ from Medina Light Show and Design hosting the Hula Hoop Dance and Costume Contest. There will be food for purchase from a variety of food trucks, too. Tickets are on sale now for $40 per person and can be purchased at www.my805tix.com. So come have fun at the Charles Paddock Zoo. As she says, it's time to get out the animal costumes, dress up, and have fun while raising money for the zoo. So it's a lot of fun. It's a good event. And last but not least, it is time to mark your calendar for the 7th annual Atascadero Tamale Festival. As you know, we had it planned in January. Mother Nature was not being cooperative. It did get pushed back, so it is now on May 6th. So plan your, hold on one second. Plan your Cinco de Mayo weekend with a sneak peek at tamale vendors on Friday, May 5th, along with enjoying the First Friday Sip and Shop, hosted by Atascadero Chamber of Commerce. First Friday kicks off in the downtown at 5:30, along with A-Town Downtown Passport to get stamped from your favorite retail stores. Experience complimentary tours of City Hall, and if it's still wet enough, we have the potential to have fireworks at 8 p.m., but it still has to be wet and safe to do that, but we have our fingers crossed. The main Tamale Festival is set for Saturday, May 6th from 11 to 7 p.m., so we extended it a little later. It's going to be a little bit lighter and hopefully a little warmer, and we'll bring all of the entertainment you're used to enjoying, from the dancing horses to folkloric or dancers to mariachi, along with a variety of bands to dance to and over 100 vendors, and over 30 of them being tamale vendors. So as always, for all of our event information, go to visitatascadero.com/events. And I'm going to ask if council has any questions before I go to Terry and her marketing update after speaking about all these events here.
Almost everything is happening in Atascadero on April 22nd. That is a big day. I'm just going to say that. Yes. I think all of us probably have three different things to go to, and that doesn't even get us to 20%. And I wanted to thank Kyla Skinner at Specs, I think, who's our woman of influence this year with the chamber, and I think she was the one that helped with that lens cloth. It's darling, so... Yeah, and men, just because I say it's a darling doesn't mean it's girly, so you can use it too. But anyway, any questions? All right, let's continue.
All right, it's my turn. So I will, Abby, look at you, you did really good with that. I have the clicker, so I'll take it from here. Good evening, Council, Mayor Moreno. Thanks so much for having me and giving me the opportunity to talk about all of our good work that we've been doing over 2022. We didn't get a chance to come and do that like we annually do, so this is that opportunity to do that. So we'll get started here, maybe. Okay, hold on. Let me, like, yeah. Where do I point it to? It changed. How about that? Sorry. Thank you. So our marketing plan updates, we have our marketing goals. It's always good to remind everybody of what our marketing goals are, because we have both the city and tourism doing marketing. The city does marketing in the community and in the county to stay, spend, and enjoy our city. And then tourism is to sleep, stay, and spend. And they're marketing on the outer skirts of our county to bring people here to enjoy our area. And then as far as 2022 year in review, we have the events and festivals that we have going on with the city and city sponsor. We'll cover those. Marketing at Tascadero, and then the tourism marketing efforts. And also as we look ahead to 2023, we're in 2023, but that's how we will go through this. Oh, okay. I'm not going to worry about the clicker. The marketing plan update, as far as our city events and festivals, we have our new events that we tried last year, our spring and fall concert series. And we also had city-sponsored events with At Her Table and the Bovine Classic. So these are some of the things that we did. We had with our spring and fall concert series, we did 4 concerts in the spring and 2 in the fall. And then that laid kind of the foundation to go into First Fridays in 2023 and bringing that back in. The fall concerts were at the Plaza on El Camino, and that event ranged between 150 to 250 people. So we were excited about that. And then we had taken the idea from First Fridays. We had our business, downtown businesses would meet, and they came up with this idea, and we started that in 2020. And in March of 2020, of course, we all know what happened. So we ended up doing our bringing that back and giving that a try this year. So we also have introduced signature city events back to full-scale events. Our Tamale Festival, Brew at the Zoo, Cruisin' Weekend, and Winter Wonderland all went into full-scale events in 2022. And then we had supporting city-sponsored events and festivals. We have return of the 25th annual Tascadero Lakeside Wine Festival. That was a big deal. It was offline for a couple years. And then the 5th annual Central Coast Craft Beer Festival, that was rescheduled from March of 2021 to October. They did a lot of virtual stuff in that time frame, but this really brought it back. And then we supported the expansion of the 2nd annual Atascadero Fall Fest. All right. So as we go into this, it just shows you some of the photos and the attendance that we have for the spring concert series and also the fall concert series at the plaza, really kind of showcasing those areas along with Centennial Plaza. We use that during the spring concerts as well. And then we have At Her Table. So At Her Table was a new signature event that started in 2022 to bring awareness and support to women-owned and co-owned businesses in the food and beverage industry on the Central Coast. They host events throughout the county and during the annual Women's Week. Through a variety of dinners and events, with the week-long celebration concluding here in Atascadero with a festival in the downtown. So in 2022, they had that festival, but in 2023, we had weather, and so we had to cancel it. So that was a part of that. But this has been a really successful event that we'll continue to support each year. All right, we also have our Bovine Classic, which, of course, is America's 4th hardest cow-themed bike race. I know that's Rochelle's favorite thing to say on that. Highlights from the Bovine Classic shown here. Our North County region was featured in Peloton Magazine and Cycling Weekly. Local events were held at Cal Coast Beer Company in Paso Robles, Long Branch Saloon in Creston, and Wild Fields Brew House in Atascadero, making it truly a North County event. That was pretty spectacular. And then go on to the next slide, please. We had highlights from this. We had over 400 participants from visitors across 12 states: Arizona, Alaska, California, Colorado, Florida, Idaho, Illinois, Maryland, Nevada, North Carolina, New York, and Washington, and at least 11 different nationalities. We had Colombia, Puerto Rico, Germany, Holland, Mexico, France, Canada, Belgium, Honduras, Ghana, and Australia. And then the average person fee was around $205. They had 2 night stays in our hotels, and partner hotels included our Carlton, our Spring Hill Suites, Home to Suites, Holiday Inn Express, and Oxford Suites in Paso Robles. So it was a big event for its first one and brought a lot of attention to our North County, so that was exciting. And if you missed it, the event will return this year, 2023, October 26th through the 28th. So definitely something to be a part of. All right, so 2022 marked the return of full-scale events with all of the food, entertainment, and festivities, from over 37,000 tamales sold at the 6th annual Tamale Festival to over 400 cars cruising down El Camino Real to Winter Wonderland. It was amazing. It was nonstop and just a lot of memories being created. So that was a good year for that. Some of our city-sponsored events to highlight are the 25th annual Atascadero Lakeside Wine Festival. They ended up with a total of about 1,100 in attendance. Their next date's coming up here on June 24th of this year. The Central Coast Craft Beer Festival offered three events with over 2,000 in attendance. They had a Friday night tap takeover, and then they had six locations throughout Atascadero for that. And then they also did the California Craft Brewers Association regional meeting and then the main festival. So it was like over 55 beverage vendors, and just, you know, if you've never been, you'll want to plan for 2024, which will be March 23rd. So this is part of Beer Week as well. And then, of course, our Atascadero Fall Festival is a three-day event with 18,000 in attendance, 68 vendors. The event offers local businesses and nonprofits free vendor space, so we're always reaching out to our businesses to make sure if they'd like to be at the festival, they can physically be at the festival with the booth. And then we'll be working with the downtown merchants on a promotion to drive traffic in 2023. So the event in 2023 will be the November 17th through 19th. All right. As far as marketing Atascadero goes, through our events, obviously, is a big deal, but we also do a lot of marketing with both city and the Tourism Business Improvement District efforts, and we have great exposure both in our community and county, as well as with our tourism focus to Los Angeles, the Bay Area, and to our drive markets like San Diego, Seattle, and Dallas. With promotional tactics, we are covering the gamut. We have, you know, all of your paid media with your traditional print ads, with your newspapers and New Times, our radio coverage. We have digital, we have outdoor with our billboards and signage and sponsorship as well. So we are in quite a few places. And then with our earned media, our media coverage through all our press releases and things, we are really out there quite often. And then owned media, of course, we'll talk a little bit about that. That's our social media pages and our websites. And then we'll go over those performance results. Here's some of our paid media. The brochures that we have for the downtown map is on your left, and those are distributed throughout the downtown. We also have traditional print ads that promote both our events and also what to do in Atascadero. And then we have our digital media. So we have Visit SloCal, has slocal.com. That's our county's tourism marketing website. We do ads for the Charles Paddock Zoo on that page. We also do things like our Live Here campaign to promote out of our area to live here, and this was something that I worked with Lorelei on with ComDev to get folks to consider moving to Atascadero and all the different ways we can accommodate that. And then, of course, our Tamale Festival with a banner ad right there and digital advertising for all of our events that you'll see across all of the different platforms. We also have quite a few billboards that we shift out very often from our Charles Paddock Zoo events to our cruise and weekend to the 100 years celebrating with our fire department, summer fun in Atascadero, kind of giving that whole experience downtown, the craft breweries, and then also, you know, trying to make the best use of our space right there, right into the magic of this season with our holiday events through the holiday time frame. We also have our sponsorship at the California Mid-State Fair, and here we did the Craft Brewery Awards, or excuse me, Craft Beverage Awards, and we have the glasses that have Visit Atascadero on them. We're very involved with that event, and then we have the apple pie judging, and we have all of our folks with Bramble Pie, A-Town Pie, those folks are there, Cardano Kitchen, judging the different pies. So we try to include all of our local businesses in that. One of the judges that you see here is Eric Olson with Central Coast Distillery. He was one of the judges at the Beverage Awards. So we'll be doing that again in this coming up in July. In addition, we have Spartan Race. Spartan Race is coming back in November, and this is another opportunity where we are one of the destinations that supports the Spartan Race in the county. We work with Visit SloCal for that and very involved with all of our swag out there and really promoting our destination and to come and stay in our area. And then, of course, we have our earned media. I had to put in here a grand opening of La Plaza because that was such a big event in 2022, and we continue to look to do different things over at the Plaza in El Camino. Of course, our own media, these are our own pages. So we have our social media pages where we do a lot of posting. We also have our Tamale website page. For those that aren't aware of that, is AtascaderoTamaleFest.com. And that's a page that is linked to from VisitAtascadero.com as well. So that shows the different pages that we have. And then next slide. We have our zoo's page, charlespaddockzoo.org, and also our zoo's social media pages, Facebook, Instagram. Now we get into the fun stuff. I know you guys can't wait for this. Basically, this is our performance results that we have on our website for visitatascadero.com. It's been a little while since you've looked at this page. It shows growth and engagement on our own media, like our visitatascadero.com website. It does show that our users have increased 22% year over year from 2021. So you can see the growth there. It's 78,388 users. And then we also have our sessions have increased by 22%, our page views by 16%. The average duration time has gone down a little bit, and we'll watch that. But at the same time, folks are scrolling faster. They're not engaged as long, but still it's two pages worth versus 1.96. So it's not that much of a difference. And then the bounce rate is 5% increase in the bounce rate, which is all positive at 68%. So those are good numbers. Next slide, please. This also gives the email marketing that we are doing. We do one e-newsletter each month. It highlights activities, events, local businesses, and dining. It has about 1,900 subscribers, and the average open rate is 48%. 22% is industry average, so this is pretty good as far as our performance results go for the marketing, email marketing that we have. And then also our Facebook results for visitatascadero.com. This shows you a 5.6% increase to our fans, our followers, a large increase in net page likes, and an increase in the number of impressions. The engagement rate has decreased, so that happens for a variety of reasons on Facebook. The Facebook algorithm updates almost quarterly, which shifts what content they deem relevant. So the audience interaction changes every time they do that. So making modifications is really key. Video content helps, having videos up that drops, helps us with engagement to have video, as well as paid boosts. Those two things help with engagement. So we'll continue to monitor this area, but as far as you know that goes, but we'll keep an eye on it. But being down 27%, that's something that's kind of a normal thing. As far as the largest age for engagement on Facebook, we're seeing that viewers are about 55 plus in age. That gives you kind of an idea there. And next slide, please. So Instagram results for Visit Atascadero are similar, but a larger increase in followers going by 35% increase, and the age of the audience is primarily between 25 and 55 on that one. Next slide shows City of Atascadero's Facebook page is up by 28% in followers at 4,002, and Instagram's up 146%. So we have definitely increased over the year, so that's exciting. And then we also have the reach that shows our Facebook reach is 60,000, which is up 36%, and Instagram is up 103%. So we are getting a lot of good traction. We post often, and that's a positive thing. We definitely are seeing the results of that. And the next slide shows Charles Paddock Zoo, and Charles Paddock Zoo being a public-facing page as well. It is 6,200 followers, up 21%, and Instagram's up 58%. We started the Instagram page in 2019, so it's gained quite a bit through the years and up 58%, and we continue to see that grow. For our tourism marketing efforts, we do quite a bit. Verdon Marketing and the Tourism Business Improvement District, they do quite a bit of things during the year. Some of the annual highlights include, you know, they always refresh in the marketing campaign. That's important for them. Each year, the focus has been on the All-In campaign, and that All-In campaign is an artisan video series. It really showcases our area and the entrepreneurs that we have and promoting them, and we'll continue that into 2023. We have the newsletters that we talked about, the e-newsletters. We have the social media content and implementation that we're continually doing. We attended the International Powwow, which is called IPW, and we met with 45 tour operators every 15 minutes for 3 days. I got to be a part of that, and that was exciting to be a part of that and be pitching our area. And I think the most exciting thing was watching it come around full circle when they called me and said, Terry, remember that hotel you were telling us about? And it was just exciting to see that come through, and they actually called the hotel, and you're like, okay, that worked. That's really good. Also, the other things we have is the submissions for the Central Coast Tourism Council and Visit California. We're always involved with them. And activated paid media campaigns are ongoing, website enhancements, all of that. So quite a bit going on in tourism. And as we look ahead to 2023, marketing will continue to create and build on what we have. We'll be promoting new events like First Fridays and continuing that effort. We'll also be focusing on the local businesses and the downtown through traditional and digital marketing campaigns that we have. We'll focus to grow our social media presence and growth of visitatascadero.com website and continue focus to foster relationships to bring signature events to our area like the Bovine Classic and Atascadero Fall Fest and Central Coast Beer Fest and those type of things. So any questions? How'd I do?
Wow. I was looking at some numbers while you were talking. So you came on board in May of 2015, and our TOT at that time was quite minimal. Mm-hmm. In 2013, I think we had somewhere in the 700,000 range. And when I looked at our budget projection from last year, in 2027-28, we were expecting 1.6 million.
Yeah.
This year, we're exceeding that by 25%.
Yes.
So that is in large part due to the efforts of you and your team, the TBID, mm-hmm. and bringing things to Atascadero. And so for those of you who don't know what TOT is, it's transient occupancy tax, and that's where tourists, you know, pay that tax, and so that helps to fund, you know, police, fire, roads, those kinds of things. So we get that money back in that way. The other thing that was really key, I remember when La Plaza opened and we're doing that ribbon cutting, and we were all there with Mike Zappas and his family, and what a legacy project that is. And he said to me, you know, it was when I first saw the Tamale Festival downtown when I said, ooh, something can happen here. Mm-hmm. And so that was really like a bit of a catalyst in his mind to get a project like that going. So the work you do is beyond tourism and TOT, but it is giving our residents, you know, things to do. There used to be nothing to do in Atascadero, and now there is. We are full.
We have a lot,
a plethora of things for people to do, and it is encouraging more investment and development in Atascadero, which is what this council is aiming to achieve. So thank you, Terry. You and your team
do a tremendous job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I will look to council for any questions.
Yeah, I have.
Councilmember Borbo.
Yeah, Terry, one of the slides there you showed that outreach on like Facebook was up a certain amount and up on Instagram, and it said paid reach was down 93%.
Yeah.
I assume we're not paying as much?
Well, we're not boosting as much as we could, and part of that...
Which means we're not paying as much, right?
So, we don't need to because we've been doing so much and getting such good traction. There are certain things we have to do, like for Brew at the Zoo, for instance. I'll start boosting that because I want ticket sales to be higher. But typically right now we're seeing ticket sales come through. I mean, there's such a still pent-up demand for people wanting to do things, and they have such an appetite for that. So if I don't need to pay for it, I won't.
Well, exactly. I was interpreting that negative number in a positive way.
It's a positive way.
You've confirmed that.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And then I assume, I mean, since I am like, you know, complete Luddite who's totally technologically not savvy. But you are, and so as things change, times change, you know, one social media becomes more popular this year and another one fades away or whatever. You're tracking those things and adjusting, I assume, accordingly that, okay, now Instagram's the big thing, or maybe it's TikTok, or maybe it's whatever. And
we're looking at that. We're right now looking to start a Pinterest page. Mm-hmm. That will have a whole like group of stories to that, and that's something we're working through the tourism board to do with Verdon Marketing. And as they work on that, then we can look at adding, if it makes sense for the city, you know, to do different pages like your TikToks and those type of things, and, you know, kind of pacing Facebook and see what's really happening there as well. So... Yeah.
Thank you, and ditto what the mayor said.
Look at you, Charles, even knowing what TikTok is. And the Instagram. Awesome. Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, I want to echo the mayor's remarks. Terrific job. It is really impressive what you and your team are doing. And we see those results throughout the city in the liveliness engagement that we're offering to the community. I was curious. You showed age distributions on Insta and Facebook, and of course, Insta's younger. But I was interested as to what the age profile is of our visitors, if we have any idea.
Our age of our visitors tends to be right in that same hub, but still we still have older visitors, so the percentage is going to be higher for the older. You know, they have more money, but we're also looking at leisure and all those different things where we have a lot of folks coming into town that way. But you're still in your like 25 plus 55. We're targeting younger as well. So, and to get the younger families to come in, and that's so important for us to do. So those are the things we're working on, but primarily older is higher.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Let's see, none. This is a little more in-depth than most city manager reports, and so I'm going to open that up to public comment. If there's anyone here in the chambers or anyone on Zoom, go ahead and raise your hand. We do have someone here in chambers. We'll get that microphone on.
Here we go. Jeff Oslin, business owner and resident of Tascadero. I do want to make a few comments. Every time there's an event in the city of Atascadero, it does promote business in Atascadero. I know that firsthand. Every event that happens in Atascadero, I either rent a generator, sell a generator, fill propane bottles for the Tamale Festival, for instance. So we know it is a very good thing. And I know we talk about hotels and butts and beds and TOT tax. Let's face it on the other end. It also brings the local residents out and about. And at times, our local residents have blinders on. They forget that there's a restaurant downtown or a business on the north end of town or a business on the south end of town, or maybe a Mexican restaurant by the zoo. So all of these events that do happen in the city of Atascadero do promote good things for both our residents and tourism, and they aid in our tax revenue overall for our city on top of TOT. So it's been great having Terry do all these things, and Mike Zappas was right in getting going in that regard, because it is helping our city. We have turned this city around from, let's say, 2013, 2015, and we're very positive now. And we have people coming from South County to Atascadero now. People from Paso Robles, our locals, come here. So we are on the map as a great home city. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? Seeing that, I'll go ahead and close public comment. And yes, I spoke with somebody I know in Cayucas the other day, and she said, oh, I heard there's this great new Italian restaurant downtown. I'm like, yes, there is. So it is fun when people from out of the area are telling me what they're hearing about Atascadero. So with that, we will move on to community forum. This is the portion of the meeting that is reserved for persons wishing to address the council on items that are not on the agenda this evening, but over which council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we will have a total of 30 minutes available for community forum. So you can come to the lectern or raise your hand on Zoom. We do ask that you state your name for the record, and we'll have a timer going just so you can kind of gauge yourself and your comments. And know that anything brought up tonight cannot become a topic of conversation, but I will triage where we can to make sure if you've got questions that we get those answered for you. So anyone wishing to speak, please come forward or raise your hand on Zoom.
My name is Dave Dutcher, and you guys got a really nice town here. Reminds me of a town back in Wisconsin. But my concern right now is Amapola Street. There's a lot of potholes in there that needs to be repaired. And I looked on their website, and I understand that you guys do provide dry stuff to put on there for the residents, right? dry patch. Well, I looked it up, and I know about stuff like that because my dad used to work for the city of Madison in the street department back in Wisconsin. But I'm asking if we can put hot patches on, because a cold patch is good for the wintertime, and it's only temporary. So we're going to end up having the same issue over and over again. Plus, I think if the street was repaired correctly, we're going to get more people going to the zoo for their brew and that. And plus, we get a lot of business trucks driving up and down the street, which help tear that road apart. So I'm just wondering if... So my concern is, instead of using cold patch, use hot patch on there, because the residents on that street doesn't have the equipment to do it, you know, to level it out and to get it down hard. And like I said, it's only a temporary fix. And we like it fixed a little bit more than what it is. And we have businesses on that street, and we have residential on that street. Trucks are going up and down that street, and that street is just getting torn apart. So, Mike, you know, sooner or later, a car is going to bottom out. And so I like to see that street fixed as much as possible. You know, I understand the city's tight with money, but like I said, you know, let's do what we can to get that street fixed and make it more attractive so people can go to the zoo, because the Amapo is right down the street from the zoo and from Atascadero Lake. So that's my concern right now. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other members of the public wishing to speak? Welcome, next speaker.
Jeff Hoslin once again. I want to talk about Senate Bill 170, which is the air resource bill that was passed about a year ago. And it's in regards to the CORE program. And most counties have been doing things with the Air Resource Board in terms of rebates for going green in landscaping or off-road UTVs or whatever it might be. We're fortunate enough that I guess you can take your tax dollars and your fees, and if you're a professional landscaper right now, you can participate in the CORE program by buying commercial battery-operated landscape items. And I definitely want to make sure our residents know this and any of the business owners that are professional landscapers, because there's $25,000 in grant money up for grabs right now. What that means is up to 70% of your items can be paid for, and you're only paying about 30% to switch over to battery-operated equipment, and you don't even have to give up your gas power. So that's an option. For riding lawnmowers and such, you get up to $12,500 towards it. So it's something that our residents need to know about. Right now, they have not extended it to municipalities or cemeteries or any non-commercial operation, but you never know what the Air Resource Board may do. And if they do, that's time to strike if you're the city of Atascadero. Anyways, and any more information, obviously, they can contact myself at my place of business. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? Welcome. Come on forward.
Austin Solheim, a donor relation and community engagement manager with El Camino Homeless Organization. Tonight, I wanted to come and talk to you guys about one of our upcoming events, Empty Bowls. But before I get to that, the first thing I want to say is thank you. Thank you to this council, and thank you to the community and residents of Atascadero. It was here that ECHO got its start, and ECHO was able to grow into the program that it is today. There are so many topics that are coming through this city council that not only work with ECHO, but work to better our community as a whole. And because of the support of the city council and because of the support of the community and residents of Atascadero, over 46 individuals and families have been housed this year alone. It's an amazing accomplishment. And when we talk about housing, we talk about all these pieces. It is amazing to stay as a nonprofit and stand aside our city council to be working on solutions for homelessness in our community. Tonight, I wanted to talk to you about our upcoming event, Empty Bowls, which we are holding at Atascadero Bible Church on April 20th, a couple days before all the wonderful events on the 22nd. It is Thursday in the afternoon from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Beautiful bowls made by local artists will be there for you to grab and fill with wonderful soups made by all of our local restaurants here in town. We will have some amazing celebrity servers there as well. But all of the money that comes from that, the soup is donated, the bowls are donated, the time of our volunteers is donated, the space is donated. And so the ticket sales from that event will truly go back to serve those who need it most in our community. So we would love if everyone would be willing to come out. We're very excited. We're holding this event again on April 20th. Tickets are available on our website. For those that can't make our Atascadero event, we'll also be holding another event in Paso Robles as well on the 27th. We look forward to seeing all of you there. Thank you so much.
And your website is?
Echoshelter.org.
Thank you, Austin. Anyone else who's wishing to speak? If you're in the webinar and you'd like to, raise your hand now. All right, I am not seeing any. So I'll go ahead and close community forum, and we will keep, since we have no one else wishing to speak at the time, I'll keep community forum open until 7:15. At this time, I'll make a few comments, but then we will move on to our next item. And then if there's anyone else wishing to speak prior to 7:15, you thought, ooh, I wanted to speak at community forum, you know, raise your hand, get our attention, and at the earliest opportunity, we will bring you on. So with that, Austin, that is great to hear. When I was there last week talking with Haley, it was 43. And then I talked to Wendy, she says, we just got another one, it's 44, and now this week it's 46. So so fabulous to hear so many people finding permanent housing. So thank you for that. And I would ask our Public Works Director, Mr. Nick DeMar, if you could get together with Dave, the gentleman who talked about Amapoa.
Thank you. Yeah, I sure can. Hopefully a Vikings fan can get along with the Packer fan, though.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I turned off my thing. Now we are on to, we have no public hearings tonight, so we're going to move on to our manager report, which is our comprehensive financial strategy, and our administrative services director, Jerry Rangel, will give this report.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. Good evening. I'm very pleased tonight to present to you the updated comprehensive financial strategy. The city has this comprehensive financial plan. In this document, it has six sections: one, key actions; two, revenues; three, expenditures; four, long-term costs; five, reserves; and six, policies. This is really a big picture perspective that can be used as another planning tool. The financial plan is useful for making decisions and considerations and should be flexible as conditions change. This is a snapshot in time that reflects current conditions and the assumptions and estimates that are based on information that's available now. Things can and will change with this, but it provides us a useful guide along the way. F14 funds, by and large, are not discussed tonight. We're mainly focusing on the general fund, so whenever I'm discussing that, I'm kind of excluding all of those. Well, there's definitely some good news tonight. Prioritization of key focus areas will continue to be the best way to accomplish our goals and to help the city thrive. This document covers a wide range of topics in pretty good depth, and in the interest of time, I will touch only briefly on it and try to go fairly briefly through them, but it is available on our website for anyone interested in learning more. This item is just for council to receive and file, and no decisions or formal actions need to be taken tonight. This graph represents the cornerstone of the council's financial strategy. The city's general fund revenues are similar to this graph's curved line. Revenues shoot up in economic boom times and down in economic slumps. Council has historically maintained the goal of consistent service levels throughout the economic ups and downs and put away money in good times for use later. The X on this graph shows about where we think we are now. We believe that the economy and the city revenues continue to grow. The existing city budget process is purposely structured to continuously receive public input on where funds are spent. The fiscal 21-22 audit was reviewed by the council in January. Then the council held its strategic planning sessions in February. Now tonight, the council is receiving this update on the financial strategy. Staff is currently working on the action plan and the steps needed to achieve the council and community goals, which will be considered at an upcoming council meeting. Along with that, staff is working on refining revenue projections, working on operating cost budgets, and considering supplemental budget requests. The draft of these will be presented by section to the Finance Committee. There will be 6 publicly held Finance Committee meetings to review each section of the budget in detail and engage with the public and receive input. Ultimately, consideration of the budget by council will be at the June 13th council meeting, and this would be the final meeting for public input before adoption of the final budget. We've worked really hard as a team over the past 2 years, and Section 1 highlights some of those key actions that were completed and some of these wins that were identified during council's strategic planning session in February. Council has taken proactive steps, and these actions have improved the city's financial outlook. Details of the long list of things accomplished and being worked on is included in this document. The upcoming budget includes the key focus areas of the economic and community vibrancy, fiscal and infrastructure efficiency and sustainability, and ensuring public safety and providing exceptional city services. Section 2 reviews some of the major revenue sources for the city. Property tax revenue is one of the city's largest sources of revenue. It accounts for about a third of the general fund. Property tax revenue has several different components that can fluctuate independently. The majority of property tax revenue is made up of current secured property and property tax in lieu of vehicle license fees. Current year secured property tax is what most people think of when they think of property tax revenues. It's the most stable of all of the components and makes up around 60 to 65% of the property tax revenue in total. This is the 1% of the assessed value of real property, like homes and businesses. And just as a side note, the city receives around 17% of that 1% of revenue. So a home with an assessed value of $500,000 would pay 1% in property tax, or $5,000 a year, to the county. And of that amount, the city would receive about $850 per year. Property tax in lieu of vehicle license fees is a revenue source that grew out of the state and local budget agreement as part of the state's 2004 budget package. Under this arrangement, the vehicle license fee was reduced to Californians, and the reduction in city and county revenues was replaced by a like amount of property tax. We generally expect a steady growth trend in property tax. The 7-year projection that's included in this document assumes property tax revenues will increase about 3 to 4% per year. Atascadero's construction development continues to be strong, with residential and commercial projects both in the works. This, of course, means increases in the city's assessed value and increasing revenue as a result. Sales tax revenue are another component of the general fund revenues and makes up about another third of the general fund. And, of course, this is excluding Measure F-14. Sales tax is the most volatile of all of the major revenues. Fuel and service stations are the largest sector of Atascadero sales tax, making up about 18% of that revenue. Sales tax from fuel prices have historically been very volatile. COVID-19 struck the fuel and service station industry very hard as people stayed home and didn't travel anywhere. Fiscal year 21-22 has since recovered as both unit price and volume sold of fuel are up since the COVID years. Revenue from state and county pools are now the second largest contributor to the sales tax base for the city, followed closely by the building and construction industry. Sales tax revenue is projected to be essentially flat in 23-24 and then will increase about 2-2.5% in 24-25 before stabilizing at a steady 3% growth. These are the assumptions that's in the 7-year projection. Atascadero has historically had one of the lowest per capita revenues in the county. The amount that the city earns in sales tax per capita has improved significantly with the introduction of Measure D20 revenue, but is still lower than the majority of cities in the county and is indicative of some of the reasons why the community can't sustain the same level of services and amenities that some of our neighbors have. Atascadero received just under $331 per resident. This is important to understand as we build the budget for the next 2 years. TOT revenue were steadily trending up through February of 2020, but then began to decline in March 2020 due to impacts of COVID. As restrictions began to loosen, revenue picked up again in fiscal year 2021, where it came back to the 18-19 levels. Fiscal year 21-22, TOT revenues broke the $2 million mark for the first time ever and ended up 40% more than the prior COVID-impacted year. So, thanks, Terry. Atascadero has seen significant building activity over recent years, and this looks to continue into the future. As I said, a large number of residential and commercial developments are still in the works, and in calendar year 2022, the Community Development Department issued a record number of building permits, 1,798 in total. Section 3 of the report is regarding operating costs. These are costs that are the bulk of the general fund expenditures and include 4 general categories: employee services, operations, special programs and projects, and capital projects. Employee services are the backbone of the community. The city is a service organization, so the largest part of the general fund expenditures is dedicated to employee services. Employee services generally make up about 60-70% of the general fund total expenditures. Some of the cost components of this are salaries and wages, health benefits, and retirement, including CalPERS. Payroll is not just a function of salary and benefit amounts, but it's also a function of the number of employees. With the addition of Measure D20 funds, 7 positions were added to the budget: 5 police officers, 1 public safety dispatcher, and 1 fire battalion chief. This certainly provided some needed relief and is a significant movement in the right direction. However, the city continues to lag behind other local jurisdictions when it comes to staffing level metrics. Per capita staffing for both police and firefighters is low compared to our surrounding cities, making it difficult to effectively staff these 24/7 operations without using excessive overtime. The situation becomes even more difficult when employees are out for vacation, are sick, or have been injured on the job. These 2 charts show the 2022-23 budgeted staffing levels per capita for both officers and firefighters compared to the other cities. Employee retention is also a concern for the city. Atascadero's fiscal constraints limit the salaries we can pay to employees. There is significant competition from other agencies whom are able to offer more generous salaries than we can. Measure D20 made large strides toward enhancing staff salaries and helping bring them into better alignment with other agencies. However, at the same time, Atascadero's voters were passing Measure D20, voters in other cities passed similar measures. Those agencies were also able to use their new sales tax measures toward increasing salaries at their agencies. The labor market is dynamic, environment, and while strides forward definitely help Atascadero from falling further behind, they don't necessarily put us at the head of the pack with neighboring agencies, as neighboring agencies continue to sharpen their competitive edge as well. This slide demonstrates only the police department, but it is an issue for city departments across the board. The existing memorandums of understandings, or MOUs, with all employee groups expire at the end of fiscal year 23-24. An across-the-board 1% salary increase for current employees would be about $164,000 in additional ongoing costs. The 7-year projection in the financial strategy assumes that current employees remain in place, step increases are given to eligible employees, and there are minimal cost of living increases for full and part-time staff. Generally, it assumes that medical insurance costs increase by about 7%, workers' compensation by about 5%, and unemployment remains fairly flat. CalPERS retirement costs are included in these estimates, both the normal rate and the unfunded accrued liability, or UAL. The CalPERS determines those two rates. The normal rate is the cost of the pension benefit for 1 year. This is a percentage that is multiplied by the applicable payroll for the year and paid at the time the payroll is paid. The UAL is a flat dollar amount and paid at the beginning of each fiscal year. CalPERS estimates an increase in the normal rate through 23-24 before flattening out. And then they also are projecting that the UAL peaked in the current year, and we should hopefully see slow decreases in the UAL amount moving forward. Operations costs are expenditures related to the regular ongoing operations of each department. They include things like supplies, tools, utilities, insurance, contract services, and that sort of thing. The operating budgets have been exceptionally tight and don't necessarily reflect the growth of the inflation and continued regulations that Atascadero has experienced through the last 2 decades or so. Measure D20 has really helped to bring some needed relief, but there continue to be particular areas that are expected to increase more than others, for example, in utilities, automotive fuel, janitorial and other services, insurance, regulatory compliance, and others. Special programs and capital projects includes those items that are atypical in nature. Their amounts vary from 1 year to the next, depending on the needs of the organization and the funding availability. The 7-year projection assumes a flat amount for each year to cover in those types of things that would come up, and also included here are costs for the downtown infrastructure enhancement project, the restaurant loan program, and the broadband program, and ongoing costs for the replacement of Fire Station 1. Long-term costs are those things that are being used on a regular basis, but the costs are large and infrequent and therefore don't appear as obvious as some of the ongoing operational costs that we just discussed. These include a number of different categories: streets, bridges, storm drains, building, park replacement, technology, vehicles, equipment replacement, and employee leave accruals. Included in the document are discussions of each category and estimates of annual costs to replace the infrastructure. These are our best estimates from the information we have now, but they will be revised as new information is available. During the pavement management system update in 2014, the 10-year PCI projections, pavement condition index projections, had different budget scenarios were analyzed. It was estimated that the city would need to spend about $5 million per year on roads to maintain the existing PCI at 48. The estimated annual reserve requirement that's identified in the financial strategy is based on this $5 million a year. The reserve fund strategy amount that we have in the document was calculated by averaging fiscal years 22 and 23, their budgeted capital expenditures for roads, and this averaged to came to about $5.5 million. And this isn't to say that we have sufficient funding for roads. This is to say that with all the roads funding sources that we currently have available, F-14, local transportation funds, road maintenance and rehabilitation funds, or SB-1, we have been able to keep the PCI stable. This same pavement management system update from 2014 estimated that it would cost the city about $14 million per year to increase that PCI from 48 to 82. The financial strategy does not propose that level of spending, of course. However, for the future, we may want to consider hosting a public discussion on what the PCI that we as a community and as an organization want and realistically can achieve. After that, we would have a better estimate of what annual amount we would need to spend annually on the road to achieve that PCI goal. Pavement management is critical, of course, but there are many other components of the transportation system, as listed here, that work in concert to support safety of motorists, pedestrians, bicyclists, and the emergency response vehicles. The city is responsible for maintaining a transportation system that involves 145 centerline miles of roadway. Every budget cycle, the five-year capital improvement program, or CIP, for roadway projects is updated. Over the five-year period, the city anticipates spending over $28 million to maintain and improve the city's roads. The current five-year CIP includes over 36 centerline miles of roadway improvements involving rehabilitation or resurfacing. Almost 25 miles are funded with Measure F-14, and the remaining 11 are funded with other sources such as local transportation funds or SB-1. The last storm drain inventory that was completed was in 2012. That evaluation provided much-needed information on the condition and measurements of the system. The inventory found that at the time, overall storm drains were holding up better than might be expected. 86% were in fair or better condition, and 5% needed to be replaced. Historically, a replacement reserve has not been funded for drainage, but the city actively looks for grants, funding, and other opportunities to maintain the system well, and when possible, includes replacement of the old system during road repair and rehabilitation projects. A modest amount is included in the CIP for small repairs, but nothing is budgeted for replacement of culverts. A handful of culverts were severely damaged in the January storms and were recently replaced. The city is working hard with our insurance carrier and FEMA to get reimbursement for some of those funds. Staff hopes to perform an updated evaluation of the storm drain system and culverts and in the near future. The city of Atascadero owns a number of different buildings, including City Hall, police station and fire stations, the Pavilion on the Lake, and the Colony Park Community Center, and the Courtyard. Included in this category are also other assets such as park restrooms, playgrounds, sports areas, building improvements, zoo exhibits, just to name a few. The current budget includes $750,000 a year in Measure D20 funds for the replacement of Fire Station 1. The seven-year forecast increased that amount to $1.5 million per year as a placeholder for future funding mechanism for that building. As staff is learning that the cost of a public safety facility is significantly higher than we originally estimated. It has been the city's goal to fully fund building replacement, but we're not quite there yet. The city has a significant investment and dependence on technology equipment. The computers and associated software make up the technology system that is crucial to the day-to-day operations of the city and have an estimated value of about $3.4 million. The technology replacement reserve is fully funded, and we expect to meet all replacement needs for the identified equipment and software. The city continues to look for more cost-effective ways to implement technology for the needs of the city. The city owns many vehicles that are operated by various departments, from patrol cars to parks vehicles. The estimated replacement value of this rolling stock is about $7.3 million. We are able to fully fund vehicles for the current budget cycle. However, vehicles are becoming much more expensive than was the case even short 2 years ago. So vehicle replacement will continue to be a priority as we focus on ensuring that public safety and providing exceptional city services. The city has a significant amount of equipment, which is essential to the operation of our duties. These tools are necessary to allow employees to effectively perform duties, and the ideal strategy would be to work toward a program where replacement is funded annually, allowing the city to stay current with the equipment. The 21-23 budget does include some Measure D20 funding for equipment replacement. It also includes $450,000 for an asset management program. The process of implementing this program would include a survey of the city's existing equipment and other assets. And once this survey had been completed, the data has been verified and uploaded into the software, staff will have a much better idea of what the annual reserve amount should be and expects that it could be very well much more significant than the current estimates. There are several types of paid leave that accrue to full-time employees. These include vacation, holiday, administrative leave, sick leave, and comp time accruals. These are governed by memorandums of understanding, personnel contracts, and personnel system rules. While the city's leave accruals are real liabilities, they have different characteristics than other long-term liabilities. As an employee terminates employment, the city pays that person's leave liability out. The city then has the option of how quickly to rehire for that position and can opt to hold off until sufficient funding is available. Of course, this can also cause operational issues as the work doesn't go away. While oftentimes a department is able to move around or shift workloads to minimize overtime while a replacement is recruited, there is some level of service reduction during this period. This is not a liability that we would expect to have to pay out all at once, of course, but instead it's a liability that grows and contracts by relatively small amounts each year. There are other public asset maintenance costs that are not the responsibility of the city to maintain. Street trees and sidewalks are the responsibility of adjacent property owners to maintain. There are over 30 miles of public streets that are maintained by property owners on those streets, and some of the property owners pay into a community facilities district when others do not. All of these unfunded infrastructure items exist due to the city's fiscal constraints. As we move forward into this new budget cycle, these items may be worth consideration for city funding. Long-term costs may look daunting, but they are not unlike other agencies. The city is ahead of the game by looking at these costs and has made great strides toward funding. We will continue to look for solutions to the city's needs and address those priority issues. Reserves. The city has about 40 different funds, most with reserve balances or collective amounts of revenues that exceed expenditures. Most of these are restricted in some manner. Generally, we focus on the general fund reserve. The general fund reserve is the one that council has the most discretion over. We see this graph again as the key to continue to build reserves in periods of financial growth and judiciously use those reserves in periods of economic downturn. Council's policy on reserves has a general floor of the level of reserves as a percentage of general fund expenditures at 20%. However, this percentage should continue to be monitored and evaluated with 11 criteria items, both independently and in conjunction with each other, to determine the prudent level of general fund reserves as we move into this budget cycle. There are a number of these different criteria to evaluate and when trying to determine the appropriate level of what reserves should be. In the interest of time, I'll just review a few of these tonight. The largest driver to determine the appropriate level of reserves is the state of the economy. There are a lot of things to evaluate, and of course, here's a few: inflation, interest rates, pent-up demand, consumer confidence. The bottom line is that the current economic indicators, while they may have their temporary ups and downs, are steadily trending upward. The deceleration in growth is expected in 23-24, but fiscal year 24-25 is expected to pick up additional steam, and then the following years are expected to be back on a steadier growth rate. Another important measurement of reserves is the level of diversity in the general fund revenue. Cities with fewer sources of general fund revenue will require a greater amount of reserves in order to successfully weather a downturn in one revenue area. This is true for Atascadero, as we heavily rely on property and sales tax revenues. And just a quick note, this graph is slightly different than the one in your binder, as I made some corrections to San Luis Obispo. Reserves. Measure three is the stability of the revenue base, or how susceptible to fluctuation the key revenue source is. Property tax revenue is considered to be one of the more stable revenue sources. Here's a graph showing the property tax per capita on a constant dollar base. This smooths out changes for normal inflation so we can see the underlying trend. It's also very interesting to compare Atascadero's property tax per capita with other cities in the county. This slide shows our community has the lowest per capita property in the county, according to 22-23 budgeted figures. This chart makes one thing painfully clear. Atascadero has less money per person to spend on essential functions like public safety and parks that are critical to our citizens. In other words, the relative strength of our dollar per capita is not as good as that of our neighbor. This slide depicts sales tax per capita constant dollar over the last 35 years. Like property tax, it too shows evidence of the ebbs and flows in the market, but to a greater extent. Atascadero started experiencing an increase in this revenue after a new retailer came online in 2000-2001, but then a sharp decrease with the loss of two car dealerships, and then, of course, the Great Recession. The good news is that Measure D20 is making a big impact in the fiscal year, starting with fiscal year 21-22. The city is also seeing overall growth, in good part due to the aggressive economic policies of the City Council and all of that marketing report we just heard. We've come a long way from the early 90s when the general fund had a negative fund balance. As of June 30, 2022, the city's general fund had a reserve, excluding Measure F14, of $21 million, and fiscal year 22-23 is estimated to be just under $24 million. Some of this heightened reserve amount, of course, is due to one-time revenues, such as the 7.2 in the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, $3 million from the legislated funding through Senator Laird, $783,000 from Senate Bill 1090, and the addition of sales tax D20 revenue, and a series of fiscal years with one-time savings. There's also one-time differences, timing differences between when revenues are received and when the projects are funded. In the interim period, these funds are in the reserve balance. While the general fund reserve balance is higher than usual, it also includes funding for many of these projects that have been committed to those revenues but not yet spent, like the downtown infrastructure enhancement, the restaurant loan program, and the broadband program. Additionally, projections on this graph are calculated on a base budget before any of the supplemental budget requests have been added. there are a substantial amount of expenses that the city needs to incur to keep up with operations and to implement the council and community's goals. None of these have yet been added to the budget and will be reducing the general fund balance depicted in this graph. The seven-year projection shows a net income of about $1 million in 23-24 and a negative $3.3 million in 24-25. Again, this is before supplementals have been added. But the large negative in 24-25 reflects that timing difference I just spoke of with those large projects. Section 6 deals with the policies and practices. It's prudent to have in place fiscal policies and practices to guide our decision-making process. The fiscal strategy and these policies will add an additional layer of stability as we approach the task of preparing the budget for the next 2 years. No changes or updates to the existing policies are recommended at this time. Comprehensive overview. This financial strategy just really gives us the bigger picture perspective. It can be used as a planning and information tool, and the overall growth that we're seeing does seem to be positive, although the first year in our budget cycle seems to be a little flat maybe, but there does seem to be some growth after that. And while there's certainly good news, prioritization is still key. We need to be consistent with our financial strategy to ensure the long-term financial health and vitality. And that concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director. I want to let the public know, this is, if you're interested in city finances, this is one of the most easily digestible reports that you could ask for. Very good job. It's named aptly, comprehensive financial strategy. But compared to our budget, okay, which is about 300 pages or so, the financial strategy is about 100 pages plus a few appendices if you want. And it is very readable, very approachable. It is not like pouring through some thick text that you're going to fall asleep to. Well, some of you might, but if you like numbers and you want to know about city finances and what we're doing, excellent, excellent document. So, Jerry, thank you to you and your team. And this has really brought all of us, not just council, but you as the public, to the place where we're preparing to go into this budget cycle for the 23-25 fiscal years. So tonight, what we're doing, we're going to be, we'll have a few questions. We've had a lot of those answered by staff already, but we'll ask a few questions. Tonight isn't about us giving direction to do certain things with reserves or things like that. We've gotten together and had our strategic planning. Many of you have had input into that. And we invite all of you, any who wish to come to any of the finance committee meetings, any and all of them, to provide, to kind of see what's going on and provide feedback as needed. But we have our policies that we're moving forward with and that will help to shape this budget cycle and some of these numbers where we're seeing these huge reserves. And I'm glad you brought that up because, frankly, it looks like we're sitting on a pile of cash. And you might look at that and go, well, what's the problem? We have plenty of money. And as you said, a lot of that is earmarked for other things. So then you see us going into the red or into reserves. But that's just really money that we got 2 years ago that now we're using in this infrastructure project that took 2 years to get there. So very good job explaining that. And again, I can't recommend that document enough if you would like to pour through that and get a real good idea of what the city looks like financially. So with that, I will go to council and see if I've got any council questions. Look, some comments later. Council member Newsom.
Jerry, you were mentioning that there are usually 2 to 4 finance committee meetings. Those are coming up here in April through June for the budget. Is that correct?
That is correct. They'll start Thursday, April 20th at 4 p.m. and be every Thursday at 4 p.m. for 6 weeks.
And you have those on our calendars, right? Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Other questions? Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Great.
And I want to thank you, too, Jerry. This excellent report, really comprehensive, really valuable, and as the mayor notes, readable and workable for folks. So definitely the winner over the budget in terms of stuff to read to understand how our city is doing. I wanted to check in terms of our guiding staff on how to deploy any changes that we can afford to make with the revenue being in such a good position. That would happen in response to the action plans that come before this. So I wanted to check and see when we're looking to see those action plans from the staff come forward to implement the focus areas that the council has outlined.
Be our city manager. Sorry,
Rochelle, I should have cued you on that, as to when we think the action plans are coming before the staff action plan.
The action plan, we are working to try and get that to you here in April. I was hoping to get it on the next meeting, but we have some exciting broadband news that I need to get to you before April 30th. So it will either be on the next council agenda or a special council agenda shortly thereafter, so by the end of April.
Okay, great. Thank you. And Jerry, if you could go back to the road maintenance graphic. Little ways. I just wanted to make sure I understood. Yeah, that one. Come back. Line chart. So if I understand correctly from this, that in 2014 when we looked at what could be done with and without Measure F14, that the best we could hope to was to see a steady decline down to a PCI of 30 by about this time. Is that blue line? That was the current budget that before F14?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay, so that's pre-F14 current budget. And if we look at what our budget is now with the 5.5, am I correct in understanding that the projection was it would take about $4.8 million a year to keep our PCI, our pavement condition index, pretty steady?
Correct.
Just to not make things go worse.
Right.
And we're doing a little bit better than that, but not
better.
A whole lot.
Right.
And we have in fact seen some improvements in
our PCI
and a lot of great things in our streets that people are really excited about. every time I drive on Santa Lucia and I think about that and all of the other streets that where we've been able to improve. So I just want to make sure that I understood. And, of course, the daunting prospect of what it would take to have steadily improving PCI would be quite a lot more, about not quite triple our current expenditure. Okay. That will do me for now. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions before going to public comment? All right, seeing none, I'll go ahead and open this up to the public. If there's any member of the public, not seeing anyone here in chambers, anyone on the webinar who wants to raise their hand? I am not seeing anyone. And Abby, I don't see anyone on the phone. Do we have anyone on the phone that I don't see? Nope. Okay, good. Just want to check. So we'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to council. There is no motion needed. But I know Councilmember Borbeau, you had some comments that you wanted to make.
I did, and I actually had several, but Jerry very much addressed most of them. And she addressed this one, too, but I just really wanted to reiterate this one, that it is so good to see a peak in the PERS, projected PERS costs, in the unfunded liability portion. And now PERS, the way they do things, you know, they could change that projection. It could still go up a little bit. But the point is, and this is a huge point, is we are going to be reaching, if not this year, you know, then soon enough, a peak in our PERS costs. And that's a huge turning of a corner. Makes a big difference because PERS costs have been a huge impediment to our ability to hire more staff because the PERS cost take up such a great proportion. So that is, I just want to reemphasize what Jerry mentioned there, the importance of that. And then, you know, the fact that we are in good financial shape, of course, thank you to their voters who approved D20. It's made a huge, huge difference in our long-term, you know, sustainability and ability to provide the services they expect and then to approve them. And I think, you know, we will, you know, need to have some discussions about, you know, what to do. We've already got plans, of course, like with downtown infrastructure enhancement, et cetera, you know, for some of the money that's come in. But we will have some opportunities here that we would have not have had in the past. So that's very good news. And would, again, invite anybody that's interested to come to our finance committee meetings starting next Thursday. Thank you.
And none? Any other? All right. Well, excellent job, Jerry and team. Thank everybody for us. This is, and again, grab your copy online. You can download it. It's a good one. Thank you. All right. With that, we will move on to council announcements and committee reports. So I will just go down from my right to my left. I'll start with Councilmember Newsom.
Nothing to report other than we have a finance committee meeting next week on the 20th. Thank you.
Excellent.
Let's see. The Homeless Services Oversight Council Executive Committee is meeting next week. And the Design Review Committee is not meeting this week. I'm not sure when the next one's going to be yet. Nobody knows that one. The Atascadero Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency did not have to meet because we did not receive any public comments on our annual report. But the bottom line there is that the water basin is no surprise in good shape at the moment, but also historically, we're moving to manage it sustainably, and it is in good condition. It recharges better than the Paso Basin does. So we're blessed by geography that way. And then Assistant City Manager Christensen and I will be heading off tonight after this meeting to Sacramento for the League of California Cities Legislative Summit, where there's a big conference between the cities and the counties about homelessness.
I think you just gave Laura a promotion. Assistant City Manager. Woo! She'd be great at it, by the way. Let's see. I left my SLOCOG notes in my office, so I will give those to you next week. Councilmember Borbo.
Yes, I attended a Water Resources Advisory Council meeting last week, but really nothing of note to report for Atascadero. And tomorrow is an IWMA meeting, and we'll be discussing the key issue there in a moment.
I don't really have much to report. CAPSLO is meeting next Thursday, yeah. And I think APCD is meeting coming up soon here, but I haven't received the agenda yet. But anyway, otherwise, I don't have anything to report. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. So on to individual determination, and Councilmember Barbeau, I will turn that over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. As you know, I had asked to put this item on the agenda because it's an important issue, and I think it warrants feedback to me as your representative to the Integrated Waste Management Authority from the council. And the issue at hand here is we've had an eventful 3+ years at the IWMA while I've been there, but the last two in particular, the county Board of Supervisors decided in they really decided in August, but formally in October of 2021, they decided to withdraw from the IWMA, and that is to withdraw formally from the joint powers agreement that formed the IWMA. And in doing so, when they left, they then entered into a memorandum of understanding where the IWMA continues to provide substantial amount of services to them in return for reimbursement. The county, of course, then assume certain responsibilities in terms of reporting and other things that they have to do to CalRecycle, but they had to create some staff to do that, and they've been doing that with general fund dollars from the county. They recently received a study on March 21st, and the study indicated to them that they would have to charge 8.1% to residents in order to cover the costs of the county running all of the requirements that it takes to do your own solid waste management stuff. And that's in comparison to the rate that the IWMA adopted about a year and a half ago of 5.4%. So not just for that reason, but as a result of that presentation, the county on its March 21st meeting, the Board of Supervisors, instead of adopting that 8.1% fee, said, hey, why don't we enter into a discussion with the IWMA about rejoining? And so they had staff submit a formal letter to the IWMA, and our board, the IWMA board, will discuss that issue tomorrow at its meeting. To do that would require a restructuring of the joint powers agreement, which when the county left, you may recall, we had to restructure the joint powers agreement to reflect the absence of the county, and that came before each of the cities, and it requires unanimous consent. And that is all, that in other words, each of the seven cities has to approve the changes to the joint powers agreement. And so what will happen when we have a discussion tomorrow, it'll be really kind of one key question, which of course is, do the cities, are the cities ready and willing to, you know, have the county rejoin the IWMA? That would be key question number one, of course. And if the answer to that is yes, then there's certain key considerations that, that each of the, you know, the cities would want addressed. First would be the would it be the level of appropriate level of representation on the part of the county? Because previously, when the county was involved in this joint powers agreement that was established in 1994, so a long time ago, all five county supervisors served on the IWMA board. And of course, this is comparable to the APCD or SLOCOG, et cetera. Well, it's comparable in terms of the level of representation that previously existed. The other key issue is, well, along those lines, one of the key considerations, though, is that, you know, when you have arenas like where SLOCOG considers transportation planning and the Regional Transit Authority and APC, the county is a very big player because they represent all of the unincorporated areas. But in the trash business, the community services districts, basically all of the big ones, you know, Cambria, Napomo, you know, San Miguel, et cetera, they have their own garbage authority. And they are represented on the IWMA board by one CSD representative. So when you take them out of the equation, the county represents about 18.5% of the population that, you know, would be in that are not represented by cities or the CSDs. So in that sense, unlike SLOCOG or, you know, APCD, the county is a much smaller player than they are in those realms. And so I think there will be substantial discussion about what the appropriate level of representation for the county might be on the board if they were to rejoin. And then the other issue is, of course, you know, there's a political element to this, and, it, you know, there's a substantial headache, heartache, and, you know, workload involving the county's departure. And nobody would want a situation where the county rejoins and then 2 years from now, 4 years from now, you know, 8 years from now, 12 years from now, a different board of supervisors says, hey, scratch that, we want out again. And the same really would go for any city that would want to up and leave suddenly. We're looking at, there might needs to be some sort of a clause in the JPA that addresses, makes it a little more difficult for somebody just to, for an agency to leave, and that any costs associated with that would really be levied upon them, and that perhaps it wouldn't be so easy for that agency to continue to receive the services that the IWMA provides, which has made the county's departure a lot less painful for the county. So those are the, some of the key issues that would need to be addressed, but the key thing is for, you know, we asked each of our board members to discuss with their councils and get some feedback of how they feel about the county possibly rejoining and then about some of these key issues that will be some of the key points of discussion. So I'm just kind of open. I'm just ears to hear what you guys might have to say or to answer your questions about the relationship.
Thank you. I'm going to do something just slightly unconventional. I'm going to go back a step. As I see Jerry Seabach's hand raised in panelist, and Jerry, if you had your hand raised earlier, and I missed it because in Antennae, I apologize. And I even had it in my notes that I wanted to bring you on tonight. So thank you for being here, and I think that you would like to say something on the financial strategy. You're muted, Jerry.
I thought I had unmuted myself. Thanks. Thank you, Madam Mayor. And I did want to make some comments on the financial strategy, but also the reason I waited for dogs to the individual determination at the end, because I was going to stray into some other areas. One being, I agree with Councilman Bourbeau that it's an important matter whether the county rejoins the IWMA, but it is, there are some significant questions that need to be asked. I hope personally that they can work out a deal that's satisfactory to all parties to reestablish it. I've worked with that group and the garbage matters for many years, going clear back to when I was at the city of Morro Bay myself. But it's had a lot of achievements in our county as far in the waste management area. People don't realize there wasn't mandatory service. There wasn't recycling. There was things like you could put as many cans out as you wanted for the same price. It was the flat rate in many cases. So there was no incentives for recycling or reduction. And so lots of good things have happened. And I think it's a needed thing to have all the government agencies that have a role in waste management to work together and not in squabbling and as they did there for a while. That's one comment. And another is, that's a good thing, I think, that the county is at least looking at coming back in and seeing if they can make that happen. The other thing that's good, I think, from the county is it looks like they're going to join the community power JPA. And that would mean that all the cities and all the unincorporated area within our county are participated. I think that will allow for better education for citizens to understand the advantages of their individual decision, whether they want an electric user, whether they want to go with the community power or not. And it gives the San Luis Obispo County as a whole, not just the county, but all of the cities together, a little bit more influence over that organization. So I'm hoping that they can work that one out. Those were the things I was wanting to stray into. But so I appreciate your patience with me. I don't have a lot to say about the financial strategy, but I want to tell you it's an impressive document, and you've all thanked the staff for their hard work, and I also want to thank them and give them a lot of credit. It's not an easy thing to do at all, particularly those projections out as long as 7 years. You know, we are used to having 1 or 2 year budget cycles. It's hard to make budget projections and things that are come to fruition in only 1 or 2 years. Going out 7 years, there's one thing you know for sure. Those numbers won't be right. It's just...
But we know they'll be conservative.
Yeah,
well,
you try. Yeah. It's remarkable, the other thing, Ms. Rangel mentioned it, but it can't be said too many times. The impact of the two sales tax measures that the voters approved is enormous. This city, when it was incorporated, had miles and miles of roads per person, per citizen, and almost nothing to fund the maintenance or the improvement of those roads. That's the one thing that's been a massive achievement to even get anywhere near an even number on the pavement deterioration. It's not something that would be taken for granted at all. And so I'm certainly proud of your support from the council for those measures and the fact that the voters stepped up. And it's made an incredible difference. If you look at those numbers in that report, it's as obvious as it could be. And then the other is just good management and you know, hard work on a part of our staff and your council. We have something to be proud of, and doesn't mean it's going to be easy at all. It's just there's more light at the end of the tunnel than there has been in a long time. So that's my comments, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Treasurer Seebach. A very good way of putting a lot more light at the end of the tunnel than we've seen in the past. So thank you.
Mayor, if I could add a couple of things I neglected to mention.
Sure thing.
One is, I was going to throw together a few slides, but then Laura Christensen had a better idea, which was to provide each of you the staff report that the IWMA staff prepared for tomorrow's discussion. And in there, you might note that the IWMA, I mentioned the 5.4% current fee that was adopted about a year and a half ago, or came in effect a year ago. Because the revenues exceeded estimates and staffing were going to be able to keep below what was originally expected to implement SB 1383, we expect that we will be able to lower that rate to 4.4% in this budget cycle. So, you know, which is compared to the county's 8.1. And then also in this report where the county's potential 8.1 if they stayed outside the IWMA, the report also identifies that in analyzing those, you know, the county's potential participation would generate about $600,000 in revenue and require about an additional $470,000 in additional expenses to address the needs of, you know, complying on behalf of the county. And so there would be a slight net financial positive estimated if the county were to rejoin.
I'm curious about that net positive. Does that then, could that reduce the 4.4 rate, or what would, or would that,
yes,
how does that benefit Atascadero or any other agency?
Well, that potentially, you know, not in this budget cycle, but as you go through the next year, if the county were to rejoin, that expected cross savings by the time the subsequent year budget was created for the year, 24-25, yes, you could expect another smaller rate reduction from the county joining.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to just kind of go from my left to my right this way. Councilmember Darris, feedback for Councilmember Borbeau.
Well, I'm going to keep it simple on my question, but if the county does rejoin, what does that exactly mean for this city or any of the other cities for that matter, but most importantly here?
Well, financially, it would mean a potential future, you know, slight reduction in the IWMA fee. And otherwise, it wouldn't make a lot of difference to the city itself. It would be administratively easier for the IWMA, certainly easier for Cal Recycle, who would, you know, would be happy to see it happen, and it would be a lot easier for the county. So you wouldn't see necessarily a huge direct benefit to the city or its residents other than a potential rate decrease in a subsequent year. Otherwise, though, if the county were to stay outside the IWMA, you'd have to consider in the long term whether the IWMA should continue to provide those services. But if they didn't, that would create kind of a little bit of havoc out at the household, you know, waste sites. If you're showing up and now you got to explain, well, who are you? Where are you from? Are you like in a county served area or the city served area, you know, or an IWMA served area? It's just more efficient in terms of a good governance standpoint, I think, for them to be inside the tent and participating. But the impact, our residents really wouldn't see it other than there would be a small decrease in the IWMA fee, most likely, which would follow through into their as a small decrease in their garbage bills.
Mayor Pro Tem Funk.
Sure. I want to start this by just recognizing that one of the impacts of the county pulling out of IWMA earlier was that our colleague, Charles Burbeau, is chairing that, the IWMA, and how many extra meetings did you have to go to the course of a year and a half to get this thing?
Tended to 30 official meetings in 2021 and 28 and 2022, plus meetings with the county and all that kind of stuff. But we also, you know, we're going through turmoil of in between executive directors and that sort of stuff too. So.
Right. But it is one of those things that, you know, all of us as council members have service in various committees. But I just want to thank Councilmember Burbeau for carrying, you know, our city and our county through what would have been a very difficult process otherwise, in order to keep IWMA functioning. That being said, it looks like it's a win-win to have the county back in IWMA financially for everybody. It's a win for the county. It's a win for the rest of the cities and CSDs as customers and our, all of our folks. So that makes sense. You mentioned that the areas represented by the county that are not directly represented on the board by the CSDs or cities represent about 18% of the population. But also I recall in the materials that you provided that they were that not necessarily trash customers to the same level because it tended to be rural and didn't necessarily have required service agreements and some of the waste that...
That is correct. I mean, if they represent 18.5% of the population, they would represent a considerably smaller portion of the overall trash volume, because most of most of all your large commercial customers, your multifamily customers, all that stuff, all exist inside cities and built-up areas like CSDs. So, you know, there's no Costco out in the county served area generating thousands of pounds of trash and you know, the revenue that goes with it, but also not generating some of the requirements that go with that. So some of the very rural areas in the county are exempt from some of the requirements of 1383, but there's still a heck of a lot of compliance reporting and things that the county does have to do for those residents.
Sure. I would think that to that end, it would be appropriate to see the county's representation on IWMA be significantly smaller than 5 supervisors, given, you know, the rest of the size of the board, and something that's somewhere between its percentage of the trash and its percentage of the people would be more appropriate, a minimum of 1 or 2 supervisors. If it takes a little more to get that. I also think, given that the county's decision to abruptly pull out of IWMA for reasons that weren't about the real operational efficiency of IWMA, certainly, and clearly weren't ultimately cost-effective for the county customers, that imposed costs on everybody who stayed in IWMA. And all of those extra meetings and all of that work to renegotiate all of this. So it seems appropriate to have some kind of disincentive for bodies to pull out that would, if you have to leave, that you need to buy your way out or have a good reason to avoid imposing those costs, and potentially that some of the gain that the county gets by rejoining IWMA you could share back with the customers for a year or two in recognition of the costs that it imposed.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you call it, you know, a withdrawal clause could be properly structured. That's going to involve the attorneys, of course, to see what can be legitimately done. But it's obviously a concern particularly with the county, because they have withdrawn, that they wouldn't turn around and want to do it again. But even really any of the cities or anything, for whatever reason, that would wake up one day and decide they want to leave, having gone through it, there should be something in the withdrawal clause, if you will, that heavily discourages that.
Yes, I would certainly concur in that.
Yeah. And I would add, though, that one of the key things that, you know, bothered the previous majority and the Board of Supervisors was the IWMA board had enacted a couple of things that they disagreed with from a policy perspective. And after the board, the county left, and the JPA was rewritten to reflect their departure, it was also rewritten to reflect, though, and there's a strong clause in there that says that the IWMA will focus on those items mandated by the state. And so I don't really foresee that, you know, we should have kind of policy disagreements on how far the IWMA should go in a particular area or not, because, you know, clearly the focus is going to be on the IWMA exists to help all of the jurisdictions comply with all of these requirements that the state imposes, and that, you know, that's our lane. You know, the JPA says we'll stay in it. So I suspect there really shouldn't be any kind of philosophical policy disagreements. There might be disagreements on how to get something done, but not on what needs to be done. And I think that will be helpful in ensuring that neither the county nor any other jurisdiction feels like they're having, four of the cities trying to shove something down their throat or something. That shouldn't happen. And so I think the likelihood, or that's kind of a built-in protection from having a food fight over something that's not directly related to the mission.
Sure. And I'd just add that IWMA is a great example of the way in which the cities and the county can work together in ways that better serve all of our residents inside and outside of the cities.
Right. I think that's a great comment, because essentially, if the IWMA didn't exist, every city would have to hire more staff to do all of these things. And by having the IWMA, it's much more efficient, because you have a much smaller staff than what the cities and the CSDs would have to hire to do it.
Yeah. Are you complete?
I'm complete.
Thank you. Councilmember Newsom.
Thank you. Well, most of my colleagues have already asked the question, so we know that there is a cost savings to our city. It's nice to see that it can go from the 5.4 down to the 4.4%. That would be nice. With the Joint Powers Authority, obviously we want it to represent the city values, and when IWMA was bringing back some of the items for us to discuss, it seemed like there was a challenge with addressing those values, as well as having a board leader. So hopefully with the county coming back in, that'll help free up and allow others to step in and want to be a part of an organization and move forward. The challenges I see is it's going to take 4 to 5 months for the county to rejoin, so actually seeing cost reductions looking more like 2024 instead of, you know, something immediate, because it's going to be a lengthy process for them to get back in.
Yeah, like I said, though, the IWMA is in good financial shape right now, and we'll see a reduction in July, most likely, you know, when we start the new fiscal year. And the county's impact wouldn't be felt really until the next budget year, and that would be a much smaller impact, but would still be a positive financial impact, and still result in most likely in a further but smaller reduction.
I support it. It sounds like it's going to save some of our staff some time and also be a cost savings to the city. So thank you for bringing that up.
I have one other quick question, if I may.
Sure.
Charles, you were talking about, how did you word it? Representation. Yeah, the reasonable or logical representation. Is that going to be a sticking point on negotiations or whether or not they join and what they want versus what the other cities believe is reasonable?
I don't know. I can't imagine that all five supervisors are dying to join another committee. You know, they have plenty of committee assignments, so I highly doubt they're going to feel left out if they don't get their five seats back. But I don't know how they would react, to be honest. I mean, I don't imagine they would in any realistic shape expect to have five seats. But whether they would balk at, as Councilmember Funk indicated, you know, a one or a two, I really don't know. But, you know, you're in a situation where the county, of course, is used to, and we are used to, the county being the big, you know, the big dog in the house, right? And then, and when it comes to trash, they're just not. And therefore, I don't. It's, you know, kind of a paradigm shift, if you will, for they and all of us. But I don't think when the logic is presented, like, I can't see that it would be a deal breaker.
And I really want to thank you for the leadership that you showed in this, because I remember you mentioned the issue of, you know, certain members of the IWMA, and not just at the county, but even some of the city representatives, sort of using that board to legislate, if you will, things that were not part of state law requirements that, you know, some cities and, you know, some members of the Board of Supervisors balked at. And so you being able to pull everyone together, I remember having one of our countywide mayor's meetings, and Jan Marks came and presented some things, and all of us mayors were there to say, like, you know, hey, yeah, this is, we would like to not have this agency be taking us in a direction that isn't simply dictated by state law. And so you could tell there were some that would like to have it more like that, but we were all willing to compromise and come together on that. And so I really appreciate that about the seven cities and you being able to help facilitate that, Councilmember Bourbeau. So I think the fact that that is in there is sort of a safeguard, because I think my only concern in this is, you know, every board member you add, you dilute Atascadero's vote. And so that's, you know, that's one thing. Is that a reason not to have the county back in? No, it's not. I would say, you know, one member would, I think, be reasonable. And the things that you've talked about in terms of, you know, for any agency, if, you know, we wanted to hop out or anyone else, that there should be, whether it's a disincentive or some sort of time frame that has to allow for the orderly, you know, withdrawal of an agency. So I would agree with that. I'm curious how that $200,000 is that, you know, do you feel really confident in that we will actually save? Because, I mean, clearly we can't say, well, we know it's going to be $662,000 in revenue and $470 in extra expenses. But do you feel confident, as the numbers person you are, that it will be that net positive moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I feel confident that the county joining would bring in more revenue than it would cost than there would be an added cost. I mean, you know, the number isn't going to be precise there, but I think it would be in that ballpark, and it would be enough for you to see another tick down. Okay. in the overall fee. The staff is doing very well under leadership of the new executive director, Mr. Cron, and they're being efficient, and we're ending up at a staffing level that's less than what was originally projected to be needed to comply with 1383. So I think, you know, the IWMA has really just come a long way in terms of its internal management.
Yes. Yes.
And its efficiency, and so it's strong financially. But I do think that, you know, this will save the county a lot of money, and it'll save us a little money.
Yeah.
But there will be that net savings there.
Okay. Do you feel like you have sufficient feedback?
I do. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you
very much. And I will ask if there are any other individual determinations. Oh, I have somebody that, I have somebody that would like to speak on that. Thank you very much. I'm not used to going to public comment on. Thank you for looking out for me, City Clerk. All right, Jeff Oslin would like to speak on this individual determination item.
Thank you. I hope you can hear me at this stage.
We can.
Great. As we know, Councilmember Bourbeau and I have had a multitude of discussion on the IWMA. Some positive, some not so positive, and I am happy to say I'm thrilled that we have fixed it, that they are not a regulatory agency. They are taking strides from the state in doing their job now in letting us know what's coming and what we need to be doing. And as long as that safeguard stays in there, I think it's probably a big benefit to allow the county back in. However, we've all said, we don't want to dilute the vote. And I think with every CSD member that also oversees their trash. I think one member of the Board of Supervisors is the appropriate vote. And then for a twist, I would say, why don't we ask the county to buy back in, being they've cost the cities a lot of time and money that maybe they should be charged to come back in. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak? I am not seeing any, so I'll go ahead and close public comment, and our meeting is adjourned. Thank you.